We have to learn how to deal with the anger. Yeah? Not putting the anger outside, but looking in ourselves what causes the anger. I mean, when we do, for instance, when we do body investigation, I mean, it is one thing in our body investigation is one thing to bring up displeasant feeling, angry feelings, and so on, to learn how to deal with anger. When we learn how do we learn how to deal with anger? If we had some investigation into pain, when there is pain, when we sit, and there are painful feelings, and the painful feelings become stronger and stronger so that we cannot concentrate on the Buddha or on the breath anymore, then we start to investigate painful feelings. Yeah? The first thing is we have to accept pain. Yeah? And then we have to ask ourselves, what is pain? How does it feel, pain? Yeah? I mean, let the whole body experience the pain, and we know the experience of pain. Yeah? And then we ask, where is the pain actually? Yeah? Is it in the skin? Is it in the bones? Is it in the sinews? Is it in the muscles? Is it in the flesh? Yeah? Because since we are born, we have all these faculties. Yeah, we have the sinews, we have the muscles, we have the flesh, we have the bones, we have the skin. So where actually is the pain? Because we know when we get up, the pain is gone. Yeah? That is very different if we cut ourselves, then, if we walk, if we stand, the pain is always there. Yeah? But the pain in sitting meditation, where is it coming from? And when we adapt, to investigating pain, then we can investigate any kind of feeling. So the first thing is to accept the feeling. Be it sadness, be it, despair, be it anger, or be it lust, We want to feel it, yeah? And that means we have to accept it, yeah? And it is unpleasant, yeah? Most of the time it is very unpleasant, or even restlessness, yeah? I mean, it is very unpleasant feeling. So we have to stay with it, yeah? Accept it, and then we look, for the source of it, yeah? What caused this feeling? So that means what came before the feeling of anger, or what came before the feeling of frustration, or what came before, what kind of thoughts, what kind of memories, or what kind of sensation, triggered it, and what came before that, and before that, and before that. We have to unravel, we have to unravel these kind of things, just like we unravel, when we see an avalanche, we roll the snow back, so until we see, what caused it, the avalanche, and then we find the stone, and then we know this caused it. And for anger, it is mostly due to our views and our opinions. Somebody does something, that is not in accordance with our views. Somebody, says something to us that is not in accordance with our views and with our opinion of ourselves. And that's why we get angry. Yeah? And that's why we also defend ourselves. So see this. Yeah? Anger is not caused by other people. It is not caused by the government. It is not caused by our family members. It's not caused by our loved ones. Yeah? It is not caused by our relatives. And it is not caused by our boss or situation or colleagues or whatever. It is within our heart. Just like any kind of feeling arises within our heart. And this is something that we have to understand. Because if we want to overcome the dissatisfaction, for instance, with anger, when we feel the anger, and we can ask ourselves, why am I doing this to myself? Because I'm doing it. It's not somebody else who causes the anger. It's me who causes the anger. Why am I doing this to myself? This is something we should be aware of. Yeah? It is not the others. Yeah? The others, our sights, our sensations, might trigger a memory or might trigger, a trigger a thought that will cause this anger or will cause this dissatisfaction. Yeah? And we have to look out and see. Yeah? Because then, once we see, you know, the stone that causes the avalanche, I mean, we can pull it out and there's no avalanche. Ne? There's no anger. Ne? Or there's no dissatisfaction. Or there's no boredom. Or there's no restlessness. Or there's no lust. Ne? But it takes, you know, it takes us really down into investigation. And it takes us, it needs, you know, samadhi, or it needs sati. Yeah? We need to be able to focus on the thing, yeah? To focus and to trail it back, yeah? So we need concentration, yeah? We need the concentration to trail it back, you know, to where it's coming from, yeah? Nobody of us, you know, I mean, you know, when he sees an open fire, puts his hand in and sees how it is burning, yeah? Everybody will withdraw it, yeah? But for us, the fire, you know, that burns our heart, we always look outside. We look, what is the cause of our fire, and then we see a shadow there, and then we say, this shadow is the cause of our fire. Now we have to turn our view from outside towards inside, and then we see, yeah? And once we see, you know, what is the cause of our fire, we don't even have to say it, yeah? We don't have to say anything. We see it, we understand it, and we let it go. The heart lets it go, not the mind, yeah? It is like, you know, it is like, that's why I use the simile of a little child, you know, whose hand is on the fire, yeah? But it always looks outside. Now we tell the child, you know, I mean, to look where his hand is, you know? I mean, you don't have to tell the child, you know, to pull back the hand. It will automatically do. Once it sees where the real cause of the fire is, yeah, it will retract automatically. And that is... That is the work of the heart. We cannot tell the heart to let go, yeah? Because it doesn't know this understanding. It doesn't know this command, yeah? We can tell the mind to let go, yeah? Not to give in to, but we cannot tell the heart. The heart needs to understand what it is doing, and once it sees what it is doing and it is harmful to itself, it will let go on its own accord. This is something that is something that we really do have to understand. Is it a little bit clear or what? Yeah? And for samadhi, you know, it's just the same thing. We need to train samadhi. We cannot let go of our anchor that we have. The anchor, be it the Buddha or be it the breath around the tip of the nose. We cannot let go. And no matter what, no matter how quiet it is, or no matter how pleasant it is, we should not go on to the feeling that arises because of our meditation, but stay with the object of meditation, and the object of meditation for samatha is the Buddha or is the breath. Yeah? So whenever there's a nice feeling coming, you know, we go to this nice feeling, and then the samadhi is gone. Yeah? The concentration is gone. Yeah? That is not the purpose of samatha. Samatha, you know, is the purpose, you know, to stay with the anchor until we enter one-pointedness. Eh? And then there is no anchor, or there is no person who observes the anchor, because the person who observes the anchor and the anchor itself merges into one. Yeah? And one-pointedness is a preview of nibbana. Yeah? And without sati, we cannot do really investigation, yeah? We cannot, you know, because our mind constantly goes out, you know, it doesn't have a fixed point, yeah? For investigation, we have to stay also, focus on the same point, yeah? And ask questions, yeah? I mean, okay, how does it feel, anger? Yeah, is it pleasant, you know, is it unpleasant, yeah? Why am I doing this to myself? So you stay with the anger, yeah? Or you stay with the feeling of the anger, and then you ask what came before, yeah? What caused, you know, what was before? Before the anger arises, because the anger is just like everything, anicca, impermanent. It arises and ceases, it arises and ceases, and arises and ceases. Just like every feeling arises and ceases, yeah? Just like every thought arises and ceases, yeah? It has no intrinsic value, yeah? Memories, you know, it arises and ceases, yeah? And the Lord Buddha told us, you know, they are not us. They don't even belong to us. It's anatta, yeah? It doesn't belong to me. Whatever arises and ceases doesn't belong to me. Yeah? use these principles, yeah, and get down into samadhi, yeah. And it is important, especially now where the world is really in turmoil, everywhere, yeah. Okay, is this more or less understood?
Can I ask the question? You always say investigation or samadhi.
Yeah.
Get them mixed up.
Yeah.
For me, investigation can lead to samadhi. Is that okay?
Investigation can lead to samadhi, yeah? Yeah.
But that's
wisdom. Reason. Yeah, but this is the last step, you know? Then you're gone. if you really do, you know, if you really do investigation, yeah, I mean, it happens, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're really on the point, yeah, then it goes into samadhi, yeah, but only the moment you understood it. Then the mind lets go, just like I described it. Then the mind lets go of it, yeah, the investigation, it has understood it, it lets go and enters samadhi, yeah. What is the trick of the kilesas? Yeah, I mean we investigate, and we think we understand, you know, and it becomes clear, or the mind gets calm, because investigation is also concentration, yeah. And then it tricks us into going to samadhi, yeah. And we should not let that happen. Yeah, then we should stick, yeah. As long as you have not understood what the investigation is about, you should stick with the investigation, yeah. I mean, if you happen to enter upachara samadhi, then you cannot do any more investigation. That is clear. But you don't enter up in upachara samadhi, yeah.
Then
yeah.
Investigating.
Yeah. Then you still go investigating, yeah. So I mean, there are two ways, you know. I mean, the deeper the investigation is, you can end up in apana samadhi, where everything just completely disappears, you know, because you really push through, yeah. Or you end up in upachara samadhi, where the mind completely gets stable, yeah. And in upachara samadhi, there is no thought, no memory. So I mean, how can you do investigation? Yeah. But the kilesas love to fool us. Yeah. Okay, understood. So, questions from the people in the world?
Yeah, anyone have questions, you can raise your hand and unmute yourself. Hector, yeah, go ahead.
Me?
Hector first, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, John. Okay, so it was like you tuned into my mind with that talk. And it kind of led into some recent practice that I was doing from what you told me last time, where I'm treating the fight as too much of a fight. I mean, it is a fight, but it's not a fight. And this made me remember something that I learned when I was learning how to box. The instructors would tell me I was too tight. And I could be faster, stronger than my opponent, but if I'm tired by the third round, they could just punch me and I can't defend myself. And so I applied this to my meditation and I said, okay, in what aspects can I lessen my tenseness? So I completely shifted my practice. Instead of a Subha or a Maranasati, I was seeing things as the four elements, because a Subha was creating too much aversion. So I switched it to earth, water, wind, and I just saw it in an equanimity, not as a complete opposite of lust. And then there was this centering that happened. So I said, okay, but then there's this evil Ajahn in my mind, you know, like an evil version of a Mahabua or a Martin, and he's telling me, you need to practice harder. You should go back to a Subha. But then there's another one. There's a good one in my mind. He was like, no, it's clearly not working. Shift your practice to what's working. So instead of mindfulness of death, I focus on the Brahma-Viharas. And I start doing metta and equanimity and compassion. And I start entering into samadhi even better. And so, but there's always this, you're being lazy, you're not working hard enough. But I really started not listening to him. And I was even laying down, and I could enter in samadhi laying down. But then there's this ajahn, it's like, no, you're being lazy, you're going to fall asleep. And so I completely challenged the opposite of what I've been doing for the past year. And almost to a certain extent, the less that I practice, it's impossible for me not to not practice. The Dhamma is always watching. I don't know how to describe it, but it's always there. And it's always watching, it's always observing, it's always seeing things. But the less that I practice, I'm actually practicing better. So it sounds completely counterintuitive, and everything in my mind is screaming I'm being lazy, but my citta is like, no, this is exactly right. And almost to a certain extent, I don't know why I'm asking you, because I feel like I need to trust myself more, and I need to have more confidence in my ability to come up with solutions on my own, you know, because I'm not always going to have someone there to guide me. So I guess the question I'm trying to ask you is, you know, I feel like I'm on the right, I'm figuring it out, and I just want some extra, maybe yes or maybe no, or I don't know if that question was clear.
Yeah, I completely understand you. Yeah. But there's a slight problem. Yeah, there's a slight problem. That's what you think the citta tells you, yeah, is actually what the kilesas are telling you. It is very observable. Yeah? And it happened, you know, it happens to everyone. Everyone who comes here, and, you know, I mean, meditates for 10, 12 or 14 hours, says it is too tough, it's too tough. When I wait, you know, and I don't get into samadhi, I cannot do an investigation. Yeah, when I'm at home and practice, you know, and lie down and relax and practice, you know, I can so easily get into samadhi. You don't, yeah, you don't see the tip of the iceberg if you do not practice, you know, practice continuously, yeah. Yes, of course, you should relax, yeah. You should not be tense, you know, just like with your boxing experience, you know, if you're too tense, you won't get anything, yeah. But you have this tendency, you probably have this tendency, you know, of pushing for results. And this you have to let go. Your interest should be your result. No, there's no result. Your interest should be, am I with my Buddha or am I with my breath or not? Yeah? And do I know how the breath is at this moment or not? Yeah. But this pushing for results, I want to get into samadhi, I want to achieve this, I want to achieve that. That is what we were trained as Westerners, yeah, to get results, yeah. And this we have to let go. And that is very difficult for most of us, yeah, because of course we want results, we want to have a nice, yeah. And yes, of course, sometimes yes, you can relax, yeah, but then also exert your effort, yeah, but not effort, you know, in trying to push things, trying to observe things. Okay, I want to know. Okay, I want to know. Okay, I want to know how the breath is now at this moment. Okay, I want to know how the Buddha is at this moment. Yeah? And what you said in the beginning is, it is very interesting for me to hear, yeah? I mean, when you do a supa, you know, all these angry thoughts are coming up. Yeah? Of course, then you need to do that. But do it, you know, do it leisurely. Yeah? Don't push yourself too much, you know, but do it, you know, for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, you know, once a day. Yeah, that's enough, yeah, to see. That's where the anger comes up, yeah. And as long as the anger comes up, you have not overcome anger yet.
I would be anagami, then. Yeah, of course, yes, yes, okay.
So you understand what I'm saying, yeah?
Oh, 100%, 100%, yes, yes, yes. It's very clear, and that was why I asked you, because part of me was like, I think the kilesas are tricking me. I think they're really trying to me to be... But there's truth. It's a good argument, though. They have some... Because they can't lie to you without a little bit of truth. Yeah. There has to be a little bit of truth for it to be convincing.
Yes.
Right?
And that is the relaxing point, yeah? The truth of it is not to push, yeah? Just to be, yeah? That is the truth of the kilesas.
I always know when I find good Dhamma because I laugh or I cry. So I'm laughing now, so it's good. It's good. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, other questions?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to
ask a question?
So, Ajahn, can I ask you? So the mind is the wisdom, and the heart is the chitta. So what is the, where is the correlation of the two?
Now, the chitta. Within the chitta, there is the mind, yeah? It's a part of the chitta. The mind is a part of the chitta. What we normally call the mind is the rational aspect of that heart. Yeah, I mean the chitta and heart are pretty much similar. Yeah, the same thing. Yeah, and the emotional thing is also a part of the chitta. So both things are part of the chitta. Yeah, just like your sati is part of the chitta. Wisdom is part of the chitta. Yeah? Samadhi is part of the chitta. So it is the essence, you know, from where, you know, it is the soil where all these flowers grow. You understand?
Sadhu, I
anyone else have questions to us? Oh, Annabelle? Yeah.
Hi. So, I have been trying to follow your previous advice about practicing samadhi. And you recommended to stay around the tip of my nose and try to catch the moment when in-breath turns to out-breath and the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So when I breathe out and breathe in, there's a break between it.
Yes.
So it's more easy for me to stay with it, to see the out-breath going to in-breath.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way around, it goes quite fast, so it's more harder for me to see it.
Yeah,
but it helps me to keep interested in the breath. So I really see, it becomes more easy to stay with it, and I see improvement with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then because I want to see it so well, I'm trying to control it a bit. And when I'm aware of me being me trying to control it, I can be aware of the breath again, and actually I can stay with the breath more easy, and sometimes I see a thought being there again, and then I'm more quicker to get back to the breath more easy and stay longer with it. So for that I see improvement. But then after a while, it goes well for a while, and then later I start to get drowsy a bit, and then I get lost in thought for a while, and then suddenly I notice again that I was lost longer than, you know, before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, oh, I have to focus on my breath again, and then I start to control it again. And then I'm aware of controlling it again, and then it goes well for a while, and then I get drowsy, and then, you know, it goes a bit again and again. So do you have any advice for me on that? And am I practicing even right, or should I change something?
Normally, you're practicing correctly. What is happening, yeah? The moment, the mind, yeah, you will see, yeah, before the drowsiness. Next time, you know, the drowsiness start, yeah? I mean, reflect what came before. What kind of thought? There's probably the thought, I want to go to sleep, yeah? The moment the mind, I mean, we are trained like this, yeah? I mean, we go to bed and we fall asleep, yeah? Because the mind gets calm, yeah? We can't fall asleep if we are worried, yeah? If we think a lot, and if we memorize a lot, then we can't go to sleep, yeah? So, what is happening in the state of samadhi, the moment the mind gets calm, it automatically goes to sleep. And it announces it, yeah? that when we have the sati, we see the announcement of the kilesas, oh, I go to sleep, yeah? And that is shifting into drowsiness and then later, you know, into daydreaming and whatever it is, yeah? So catch this thought and say, no, I don't want. Yeah? And you have to be a little bit more aware, yeah, of how the breath is, yeah? Not only this point, yeah? But also see, is the in-breath longer, is the out-breath longer, or what is it, you know, is it rough or is it detailed, yeah? Get more developed, more this knowingness of the breath, yeah? Look at the point, you know, that keeps your interest, but then also look at the breath itself, you know, how is the breath, yeah?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I know you talk about seeing pain or cut out the body and stuff like that, but I'm not sure when I could be focused on that, because right now I just focused on practicing somebody. Actually, I want that to be right first before I can do the next step. Sometimes when I'm in pain for too long, I try to see it, but I think my somebody is not well enough yet to really.
Not necessary. Normally, I mean, this investigation of the body is only for people who intensely, you know, practice, yeah? I mean, they practice 8 hours or 10 hours a day, you know, and then they start, you know, practicing also a super practice. But what you can do while you're in this world, yeah, is reflecting about birth, old age, sickness, and death. I mean, remember the years when you learned to walk? Remember the years when you went to school, you know? Huh? Or when you learned to walk, when you learned to talk, yeah? And then you can look at your parents, you know, when they get older, you know, how the body is feeling, you know, that the body gets weaker and weaker. And then maybe you have some grandma, you know, that died or is close to death, yeah? So you can see the cycle of birth, old age, yeah, sickness and death, yeah. That is always a good reflection, yeah. You don't have to dive into the body, yeah. The body gets older, the body is young, you know, it is strong. I mean, you're educated for 18 years, yeah. You learn, you know, you learn to walk, you learn to talk, you learn to think, you learn to write, you learn to read, yeah. And until you're 18, yeah, then you can use the body full strength, yeah. And then you can use it for how long, how many years? For 30 years or for 35 years or maybe 40 years, you know, but it diminishes strength. And then, you know, it slowly decays and decays until you die. That is human life, yeah? I mean, the more clear we see this, the cycle of the human, yeah, of the human life, yeah? I mean, the more what is there for us, yeah? What is in there for us? I mean, we have to train this body for 20 years, we can use it for 30 years, and we have to wait for death for 40 years, yeah? I mean, is it really worthwhile? And all the dukkha that you have within your life, huh? Just think about this, yeah? And there you don't need so much samadhi. Think about this, yeah? And also do the daily reflection, you know. I mean, I'm talking often about it, yeah. That is very helpful, yeah. What happened, yeah? I mean, how do the dreams, yeah? When I wake up, you know, I sometimes wake up with a dream, you know. I mean, that is really predominant. How does this dream, you know, change my whole mood, you know, of the day? Or how this thought, you know, I mean, that I have in the morning, you know, changed, you know, or colored my day, yeah? When you wake up and you are very happy, you know, I mean, the day is normally quite happy, yeah? Huh? But when you wake up, you know, I mean, then the day goes, yeah? Look at these things, you know, this is, yeah? No, body investigation, don't even bother about it yet, yeah? Do this, yeah? Do these reflections, you know, about birth, death, old age, you know, and sickness, yeah? I mean, there are so many people you see, yeah, yeah, who are sick, you know. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's even helpful to go to a hospital, you know, and see all these, they are not happy there, yeah. And sooner or later we get sick, yeah? I mean, we have a short sickness or long sickness. I mean, you saw it with COVID, you know, I mean, people, you know, got sick, yeah? But that is, you see it every year with the flu. It's nothing different. Okay?
Thank you. So I have my last short question.
Okay.
I will come to Thailand in June.
Yeah?
I would like to stay with you like the first week of June.
Yeah?
But I just wanted to make sure you are there, or are you at the temple by then?
The first? Yeah. I mean, I just go to Singapore for a few days, you know? And I have nothing else planned, you know, for this year, so I will be there.
Okay. Mm.
Stay as long as you can, yeah? Not just for a week.
Yeah, it will be just for a week, unfortunately, for now.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the 1st of June, there's Magha Putra Day, you know, on the 3rd of June, yeah? I will be there. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else have questions to ask?
Are there a lot of questions? Yeah?
Four or five.
Chung Yao?
Good afternoon or good evening. I have a question. I'm just new to meditation. So we talk about we want to watch the breath in and breath out for us to so-called, this is the meditation object, and then we just want to get samadhi, right? And then just now we also talk about, I say when we feel pain, we want to do reflection or investigation. So my question is, how do we know that, let's say we are already, let's say, get to a certain level of calmness that we can start to investigation, or, you know, whenever we have certain feeling, we just go straight into that investigation. So it's between the calmness and investigation, you know, how do we sort of like...
In the beginning, I mean, you do the reflection it's sort of investigation of birth and death and old age, yeah? You can do that anytime, yeah? But any other investigation, for the moment, skip it, you know, until you're really settled into samadhi. So you observe the breath. If you think a lot, and I assume that you think a lot, use the word putto, 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 yeah? Because then it is much clearer, you know, if the Buddha is gone, you know, you are in thought, you know, then just pull it back, yeah? Be gently, yeah? But firm with pulling it back, yeah? Until you get to a level where there is no more thoughts are coming and there's no more memories coming, yeah? That's called upachara samadhi.
Okay.
And that will take, I can guarantee you that will take long time. Yeah? So you have to remember, yeah? Learning to meditate is like learning to walk or learning to talk. We get up and we fall over. We get up and fall over. But where is our patience, and where is our effort in getting up again? And that is the same thing with meditation. We go back to our object of meditation, that is the Buddha, or that is the breath around the tip of the nose. Okay?
Okay.
So it will take time, because it is very similar to learning to walk or learning to talk. We try, you know, and it does, we fail, and then we try it again until we can. So don't put yourself under pressure, you know. I mean, just bring it back, yeah. You tell yourself, okay, for 30 minutes I will be with the Buddha. Next time I will be with the breath, or with breathing in and do with breathing out, yeah.
Okay. So how, then the next question is then how do we know that we are really progressing
if you can stay, yeah, if you can stay in samadhi, yeah, that means if there are for 15 minutes or 10 or 15 minutes no thoughts and no memories coming up, yeah, you're completely stable on the object, you every instance, you know, every second, you know, or millisecond, you know how the breath is at that moment, then after the meditation session, then you can go into investigation. But it will take you probably a year before you can even go there. Yeah? So don't even worry about it. Yeah?
Thank you, Ajahn.
And same for you. What is the name of the Chinese?
Yeah.
Huh?
Taeyong.
Taeyong. So it's the same for you, you know, just practice putu, 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 putu.
Yeah? Yeah.
More questions? Sunny?
I think there's no more questions online. Maybe I just read the one question submitted.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the question. How do you deal or interact with people who demonstrate that they have a lot of unscrupulous behavior traits? I know you mentioned to just watch things like they are just a movie. I still get upset and feel like my personal boundaries are not being acknowledged for my mental well-being. How do I examine and deal with manipulative people correctly? Do I just accept it as my karma and stay quiet about the matter? Thank you, Ajahn Martin.
What was the essence of the question?
how to examine and deal with manipulative people correctly? Do you just accept it as your karma and stay quiet about it?
That would be the best way, yeah? But then also, also see how manipulative you are. Because what you see in other people, you think other people manipulate you, yeah? So you have the same tendency within you, yeah? So then look in your heart, where is your manipulative tendency? How you manipulate other people, yeah? I mean, I often said it, you know, also in the last talk, yeah? I mean, the world is a mirror of ourselves, yeah? Whenever we see somebody, we see, yeah? I mean, of course, you know, if you have good sati, you can see the other person nearly clearly, but we don't have so much sati, we don't have, you know, we have a lot of kilesas, that color, yeah? And whatever we see is the color that comes out of our heart, yeah? So when we see somebody is manipulative or somebody is aggressive, you know, it is coming from our own heart. We see our own tendencies. Yeah? Maybe they are not as strong as the other person, but they are there. So root it out, and then, yeah, when you rooted it out, you know, for instance, this manipulative, yeah, or this aggression, you will have compassion for this person. Then you know you have overcome it. I know it's a long time, a long way. Huh? Huh? Okay, you think it's clear?
Yeah.
So that was only one question, or what?
Yeah, only one question. Well, sir. Well, Hector, don't go
again. It's probably, it's like my brain, you know, when it is too hot, it doesn't work, yeah.
I had one more question.
Yeah, okay.
When you speak of apana and upajara, are you specifically, in regards to the suttas, are you referring specifically to the fourth jhana when you're speaking? Because it's only in the fourth jhana that the body will go numb, right? In the first three jhanas, the body just feels pleasure.
It is similar, it's not the same. Because the fourth jhana is still a rupa jhana, there is this, you know, there is the stillness of the body. In apana samadhi, there's nothing. There's just one pointedness. But the experience of the fourth, you know, of the fourth jhana and apana samadhi is similar, but in the fourth jhana, you still have an object. So you still have an observer, you still have an object.
Yes.
Yeah? And that is also, you know, when you go to the fifth jhana, you still have an object, yeah? In apana samadhi, you don't have it. It is one-pointed, you know, object and observer become one, and there's nothing you can say about it, But about the fourth jhana, you can say something about it, yeah? About the fifth jhana, you can also say something about it, yeah? I mean, the body is becoming infinite, yeah? I mean, it is a feeling, it is an experience, yeah? Or that, you know, in the fourth jhana, what is it? You know, it is stillness, absolutely stillness, yeah? But it's still a feeling, it's an experience, yeah? In Apana Samadhi, there's no experience, yeah? Because there's nobody that experiences something. There's just oneness. Okay?
That's the ninth jhana, that's the station of perception and feeling is what you're
doing. No, even in the eighth jhana. Now, what is he talking about? It's not the ninth jhana. No? The eighth jhana is neither perception nor non-perception. I mean, it is very intense, you know, but it's still there. There's something still there. You know there is something still there. It is neither, you don't perceive anything, but it is non-perceiving at the same time. Yeah? So there are no more concepts, yeah? I mean, the concepts are gone. I mean, in the body becomes infinitive, or the space becomes infinitive, there is still a concept of the space infinite, yeah? Or consciousness infinite. Yeah? What is the seven? I forgot about the seventh jhana. But the eighth jhana, yeah? No, Apana Samadhi is nothing, actually. Yeah, it's just knowingness, pure knowingness that doesn't have objects that it knows. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I understand. Yes.
Just get in there, and then you know. But it takes a long time. So, no more questions. So, do you have any questions?
Yeah. No questions.
Online, no questions, or Sunny?
Yeah, no questions.
Okay, let's read a few questions. Oh, it's a very short, please. Not you know, half a book.
So this is in response to a question that has been asked a long time ago, where Tanajan told this person to look into his heart, I think.
Yeah.
Kind of. And now he has a question. I have only the experience of observing the mind or thought process and observe how the thoughts slow down as one becomes more relaxed in accordance with breathing or Buddha. Does looking into the heart entail a literal method? Yeah, should I envision looking into the heart as an organ, or is it more of a metaphor for observing my defilements? Sorry if I can't frame it.
No. I mean, the question is quite valid, yeah. When I talk about the heart, it is never the physical heart. It's always the citta. I sometimes use heart and sometimes I use citta, yeah. In Thai, when you want to be specific, you use citta, yeah. But if you want to specifically be, you know, just the citta, you know, just the underlying citta, then you use just citta, yeah. So, it will drop, you know, I mean, he has to experience, you know, when he goes into samadhi, when he is around the tip of the nose, when he does the anapanasati and is around at the tip of the nose, and the more he knows the breath, yeah, the less becomes the feeling of the breath going in and the breath going out, and the knowing part becomes stronger. But then what is happening is, automatically, you don't push it, automatically the knowingness returns to where the knowingness is coming from, and it is coming from the heart, or it's coming from the citta. Yeah? And then it goes there, yeah? And then the citta, yeah? From the citta, he has then two points. Yeah? I mean, one is the concentration. He still concentrates around the tip of the nose because it has not been unified yet. And the knowingness, you know, and then he knows what is going on in the heart. So he knows if there's an intention to think, he knows is there intention to memory. So he knows these things because the knowingness dropped into the heart. Yeah? No, don't push it, you know, I mean, it gets confusing, yeah. But there's one thing, you know, where we can actually, you know, focus on the citta itself when we listen to a Dhamma talk, yeah. That's where we go with our focus really there between the physical heart and the lungs, there's the citta, yeah. That's where we go there, yeah, and just listen, yeah. When we listen to a talk, we don't want to understand what the person is saying. We just want to listen to every word that comes out, yeah? And before it actually enters our ears, you know, it comes out of the citta. And that's where we grab hold of it, yeah? And If we can do that, we understand much better, much clearer, much deeper the Dhamma that is taught to us. Yeah? Unless it is Dhamma from the scriptures, then of course, you know, we cannot. Yeah? It is impossible. I mean, at least for me, it is impossible to listen to a Dhamma talk that doesn't come out of the heart, but comes out of the scriptures. I just listened today to a Dhamma talk. Yeah? I mean, it's from the scriptures, you know, and then automatically my attention goes to the mind to process, you know, these words, yeah. But when Lungta Mahabo gave a talk, you know, I mean, I just could listen, you know, with my heart, you know, and understand, you know, even if I didn't understand the language. Okay, so that's the only exception, you know. Normally in Samadhi you don't push it.
Next. If there are no thoughts in the mind that the heart has to deal with, are you able to free and empty your heart? Is this the purpose of meditation?
No. That is making, yeah? We're trying to make the heart free. We cannot make the heart free, yeah? We can just concentrate, you know, and the more we concentrate, yeah, not on the heart, yeah, or not on the citta, we concentrate on our object of meditation. And it becomes more and more clearer. And the citta becomes more and more empty, yeah? I mean, if there is no thoughts, yeah? I mean, there's still the, yeah? Even if there are no thoughts, yeah? And there are no memories coming up, it is pure experience, yeah? I mean, we are actually in reality, yeah? There's a lot of experience, yeah? There's feelings, you know, there's experience, there's sensations and so on, yeah? And we just stay with these reality experiences, instead of making something up, what the experience is. Yeah? What we normally do, we experience in our touch, and then we say touch, you know, pleasant, unpleasant. Yeah. But in this world of samadhi, we just experience the touch as touch, yeah, or as a sensation. Yeah. So this is the world of reality. The heart is not empty. Oh, you have to wait a long time until the heart. Okay, next.
So this is a question on the How to Asubha video. Why don't you use chemical castration instead of this complex and dubious technique?
Chemical?
Castration.
I don't even know what chemical castration is.
You just take chemicals and castration.
You don't have the hormones, the trigger lust and that type of thing anymore. So yeah. Why do all of this body investigation when you could just cut off?
I said it in the beginning of the talk, we do a super practice to bring up these unpleasant feelings, to bring up anger, to be able to learn how to deal with anger. Yeah? With chemical substration, I have no idea what it is. I mean, we probably don't even get to it. Yeah. So that is the whole purpose. Yeah. The asupa practice is the practice to overcome greed and hatred. Yeah. In the beginning, we use the hatred, you know, we look at the ugliness or the loathsomeness of the body to bring up these unpleasant feelings or to bring up this anger, yeah? And why we do it, actually, we don't feel the anger, but when we come out of the investigation, we are very irritated, yeah? And whenever something, you know, and then we stumble over, you know, over root, you know, and we, you know, we curse ourselves and so on. There you see the irritation coming up after our investigation. And the purpose of it is to learn how to deal with greed and hatred, yeah? Sooner or later, you know, we go to the pleasant things, you know, and then investigate. But to investigate the pleasant things is much more difficult than to investigate the unpleasant feelings, yeah? I mean, when you sit in samadhi and there's a pleasant feeling arising, I mean, we just go off, you know, and we can spend hours in this pleasant, yeah? But when there's unpleasant situation like pain, you know, I mean, 5 minutes, you know, we can't deal, yeah? We can't deal with it anymore, yeah? So that is the purpose of asupa, yeah? Next.
Namaste, Venerable Ajahn and monks. I have a question. I usually donate 10% of my salary, but I feel like I have money and I want to donate 50% of my salary. But it feels like a little bit painful to do that. Is it more merit if it feels a little bit painful when giving, or should I keep donating with ease and comfort my 10%? Thank you.
This is really very difficult to answer, you know. I mean, maybe go to 20%, you know, if you feel, you know, I mean, I'm taking something away from me, then of course it is more meritorious. Yeah. If, you know, if I can give, you know, 10% of my salary, you know, with ease, you know, and I don't feel anything, you know, it doesn't cut off, you know, me from anything that I want to, then it is, and it, then it is more meritorious, you know, if we cut a little bit, yeah, so that we cannot, that we cannot, you know, do everything that we want, you know, we still can do some things that we want, you know, but, you know, because of the money of more donation, you know, I mean, we can do less, yeah. So that is helpful, yeah. But 50%, I mean, yeah, unless he's a millionaire, a billionaire. I think he understands, yeah.
I'm not sure. Sorry.
What?
It's just
you don't understand what I said?
No, I think we understand, but he might not, a special person.
Yeah, I mean, if it hurts, you know, if it hurts, yeah, if I give 15%, you know, and I cannot afford, you know, my new car, you know, I mean, then, you know, then it is more meritorious, yeah, because I cut myself, I refuse myself, you know, for buying the luxury car and then go just back to a very simple car, yeah, but instead, you know, I give the other thing, you know, to somebody who is in need of it, yeah, that is meritorious, yeah. If I don't feel anything, if I give away and don't feel anything, I mean it doesn't reduce my greed, yeah. And then it is still boon, it is still merit, you know. But it is not as meritorious as if we reduce our own wishes, yeah. Okay, so anyway, we understand. Hopefully, he understands. Last one, no?
Second to last, but the other one is kind of... So I've been meditating on and off for the last few years. It's much more intensely for 1 or 2 hours daily in the last 6 months, mostly focusing on the breath sensation or body scanning. A few weeks ago, I started having intense energy tremors, PT? Through my body, usually spine, head, legs. As my focus becomes very intense and single-pointed, the tremors get very strong and they switch to a lying position, so sometimes they become even quite violent and they distract their focus of meditation. Is there anything they can do to tone down these muscle spasms and to help me progress in my practice? This is new territory. Thank you.
It is probably that we force too much, yeah? We force too much our attention on the breath, yeah? That these energetic, you know, things, you know, can disturb ourselves. Eh? I mean, relax, yeah. Don't control yourself too much. Relax a little bit, yeah. Tell yourself, relax, yeah. When it is relaxed, yeah, continue with your breath meditation, yeah. And then, pity is something that is very pleasant. It can be, you know, it can be a lot of energetic, yeah. And it can be. Go through the whole body, but it is very pleasant, yeah. I mean, you don't write any problems about, you know, having too much pity, yeah. So pity, yeah, it is an energy, yeah, that is very pleasant, yeah? But what he's talking about that seems to be very unpleasant, that means he's used too much force, you know. So relax a little bit. It's what the woman from Netherlands said, you know, I mean, she gets to control. We are all control freaks, yeah, we want to control, yeah. I mean, we never used to control the breath, yeah, but the moment we concentrate on the breath, we want to control it, yeah. Whatever we focus on, we want to control it, we want to, And this we have to, over time, we have to let go. So, last question. And then I have to ask Sani something about the trip.
In the suttas, it is said that Nibbana is unborn, unbecome, unbound, and unfabricated. Are the ways Nibbana is pointed towards with these words exhaustive, or are there other ways to explain it? If so, what are they?
What are they? Other?
She wants other adjectives for Nibbana. I don't know. To be clear, not ways that are not pointed out in the suttas, but through personal experience.
Whatever, you know, I mean, whatever people, you know, use an adjective, you know. The Lord Buddha said one thing, you know, I mean, the fire is extinguished. The fire of lust, the fire of greed, the fire of delusion is extinguished. Yeah? If there's no fire, you know, there's coolness. Yeah? You can call it coolness, you can call it anything, yeah? You can call it the unborn, but that, you know, what is the unborn, yeah? You can call it the absolute, the ultimate, I mean, he called it the ultimate happiness. The supreme happiness, yeah? But we have a tendency, we hear words, and we understand something, and another person understands something else, yeah? So that's why it is useless, you know, to use words for Nibbana, you know, it is, yeah, it is one-pointedness, it is where past and future are one, yeah? You can't make sense of it, yeah? Because every word that we use for describing Nibbana comes from the duality. Nibbana is unity. Nibbana is one-pointedness, you know, or one point, yeah, where everything, you know, that happens in duality, you know, comes from this unity. Get there? I mean, tell him, you know, or I can tell him, you know, go into Apana Samadhi. If you go into Apana Samadhi, this is your preview of Nibbana, and then you can attribute whatever you want to it, yeah? Also, it is just a preview, you know, I mean, it is quite clear. And I can promise you, in the moment you come out of this preview, yeah, of Apana Samadhi, the first thought that arises, I want to go back. Yeah? But you can't. Okay, so all the questions, yeah, from our sides, from your sides, yeah, if any more questions have arisen, you know, I mean, please feel free to ask. Otherwise, I need to ask. Yeah?
I asked you, you've been in Singapore, are you giving talks?
Sorry?
When you are in Singapore, are you giving talks again?
Why don't you ask Sunny? He's from Singapore. He's organizing the retreat, yeah? I mean, yes, I give two talks? No, just a
one talk,
yeah.
One talk in the retreat, yeah.
One talk in the evening, and I think some instruction in the morning, or?
Okay.
Just
on 28th. The talk is on
28th. What time is the talk?
I mean, why don't you look at the,
yeah,
I mean, there's
check
a...
the website.
The website, okay, thank you.
Website or even on you, on my YouTube channel, you know, I put the poster out, yeah? Okay?
Yes. Welcome to Singapore, Arjun.
Well, hopefully I arrive there, yeah? What?
Hopefully you come back.
I don't know. I mean, we have to...
You'll be in good health, Arjun.
I mean, my life can be over, you know, in 1 minute, yeah? I mean, I can have a stroke and die, yeah? I mean, especially with the seat, yeah? So, I mean, even now I'm very healthy, yeah? What was it, you know, when I was in Australia, I had minor strokes, 4 minor strokes, yeah? In that year. It was the heat that caused the first one. And then I ran over. What?
Literal heat stroke.
No, blood vessel popped up. That's a very interesting. Once your brain is not working, I mean, it's an absolutely interesting experience. Yeah, nothing is working. Yeah? I mean, you can't use the body. You know, the body is completely useless. Yeah, huh? You see, there are quite a few interesting experiences. You know? Yeah? If you're not afraid, you're not to die. If you're afraid, of course, you don't see the experience. You don't get the full experience. Eh? You just, what is happening? So Sadi, I would need two things, yeah? I mean, when I'm in Singapore, can you provide me with a laptop so that I can copy the SD cards onto my hard drive?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay.
And yes. I need a... I probably need for my camera, I need a tripod.
Yes, we have tripods here.
Okay. Yeah. So that's all. And you need to email me a plug that is used in Malaysia, in Singapore.
Okay.
Because the plugs, you know, from Thailand, you know, differ from the ones in Singapore, isn't it?
Oh, we can prepare the adapter so that you can use your Thailand plugs.
Yeah. But if you send me a picture, because I might have one from the last trip. But the last trip, when was that? You know, 3 years ago or what?
Yeah, I think
2019. 2019, yeah. Yeah, 2020 was already COVID, so there were all the restrictions. Yeah. Okay, so practice well. Use the time wisely, yeah. That's all what I can say. I gave a short talk, yeah. Exception, you know, a short talk in the beginning, yeah. You had your questions, we had our questions, so I wish you a very nice time, and some of you I will see in Singapore.
Okay? Thank
you, Ajahn. Yeah.
Thank you, Ajahn. Let's do Ajahn together. Bye. Thank you, Ajahn. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.
Sadi, Ajahn. Thank you, everyone.
So there are no questions here, no? No, okay. Oh, today was short. Always remember, it's not the situation, it's not the other person, it's me. Yeah? Don't blame anybody. Blame yourself.
And I have a question regarding that. So I remember the manipulativeness that was mentioned. Could we say then that we paint our own sunglasses and then wear them and then see the world through those sunglasses that we ourselves have painted? Basically, we see manipulativeness because we know how to identify it. But everything else that's good or bad, we don't see. Even if I'm hit in the head, but if I don't have the rock painted in my sunglasses, I won't.
It depends on how strong your painting is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If your brain painting is not so strong, you might see other characteristics that are not of your painting. But for most people, they just see their own painting. I normally use this, you know, the citta is being a slide projector. Yeah? And it projects its light onto other people or onto situations. Yeah? And when you ever see in a picture, you know, projected onto a person, I mean, sometimes you run in front of a slide projector, you really don't see this person. That's why I like this example, yeah? Because it is very... Yeah?
Would it also be true to say, sometimes I see something good or bad in somebody else, and if it's in me, then I don't like it or I feel bad about it? Or if it's not something that I have a problem with, like, I'm okay with it, I just see it. It's like I don't
yeah,
have that...
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, then you don't have it within you, you know, because normally when we see something that we don't like, I mean, there's a sort of irritation coming up or anger coming up, yeah? But if we are okay with it, then that means, you know, there's nothing in our heart that corresponds to it, yeah? If we see something good, you know, we like it, you know, and it's sometimes a reminder we should maybe develop this faculty within us. But we might have it, you know, but it is not as strong as we see it in the other person.
And the same for something which you see which is bad in another person.
Yeah.
It doesn't trigger you, then it's not something that you... I mean, not that... I'm not saying...
It's something that we have within us, and it is very difficult to admit to it.
But that means you can never, ever see unwholesome things in another person?
Yes, only if you have overcome it and you you react with metta towards it. But if it gets irritation, you know, if you have irritation, that means it's still within you.
Yeah.
Yeah?